This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, June 11th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a new safe outdoor space for urban camping opens to serve 60 members of Denver's unhoused population. It's the third site of its kind the city has opened. We'll hear about a gun buyback event taking place in Boulder on Sunday that will turn surrendered weapons into garden tools. And as COVID case numbers continue to drop, performing arts are making a comeback. We'll take a look at what's to come for enjoying events this summer. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. Today's topic will be the proposed affordable housing development located on the Celestial Seasonings property in Gun Barrel. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative, when you can start your weekend off right with an eclectic mix of music until noon. So keep your radio dial right where it is. And now we'll start with the headlines. Boulder County's public health order requiring face coverings in most settings expired at midnight. County health authorities have opted to not extend it for the time being, citing high vaccination rates and low case counts. The state continues to require face coverings in some places and for some categories of people. They include unvaccinated and partially vaccinated individuals in healthcare settings, prisons, and jails, and in offices of the Colorado Department of Motor Vehicles. Forecasters are predicting a perfect storm of bad conditions in eastern and western Colorado this weekend, leading to an extreme fire danger warning for the first time in 15 years. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The Storm Prediction Center monitors fire conditions across the country and highlight areas of concern based on how bad the fire conditions are. Higher levels of severity rise from elevated to critical to extreme. Colorado has seen elevated and critical fire conditions recently, but not the extreme fire level. The Denver Post reports that extreme fire level conditions are in eastern Utah and western Colorado, where the relative humidity will range from 5 to 10%. A high wind warning was in place last night for the central and lower Yampa River Basin and the central Colorado Basin, with gusts possibly exceeding 50 miles per hour from Gibson to Carbondale to Grand Junction. A ridge of high pressure will be over Four Corners beginning this weekend and lasting through midweek next week, meaning that much of the Intermountain West will be seeing near record-breaking temperatures with little, if any, precipitation. The Denver metro area is not highlighted for any fire concerns, but fires across Arizona have been sending smoggy conditions toward us, so expect more hazy weather in the days to come. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Related to the sudden heat wave, Colorado Front Range ground-level ozone air pollution broke the federal health limit this week, prompting state officials to post Action Day alerts that are visible to millions along highways and on phone apps, and urge residents to drive less and, in some cases, stay indoors. So far, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has issued ozone Action Day alerts most days this week. The agency expects 36 days with alerts by the end of August. The Denver Post reports that federal officials are likely to move the Front Range from serious ozone pollution violator to the highest severe category. Meanwhile, access to at least two rivers on the Front Range is now restricted, as high flows and debris make it unsafe for rafters, tubers, and kayakers. Officials have closed parts of the Poudre River and Clear Creek to limit people on the water. In Fort Collins, the Poudre Fire Authority says it has rescued more than a dozen people in the last month. The groups Save the Poudre and No Pipe Dream are suing to stop the city of Fort Collins from processing an application for Northern Integrated Supply Project infrastructure in the city limits. Gary Walkner from Save the Poudre alleges that the Northern Integrated Supply Project is attempting to use the site plan advisory review process to place a diversion structure, pump station, and massive pipeline across natural areas in the city of Fort Collins. He adds that the city has scheduled a hearing at the Planning and Zoning Commission for the Northern Integrated Supply Project on June 30th. In turn, Save the Poudre filed a temporary restraining order with the court against the city to stop the commission hearing. Walkner says the proposed project would drain water out of natural areas along the Poudre River throughout Fort Collins, thereby draining wetlands, drying up the riparian forest, and diminishing wildlife habitat. The Regional Transportation District, RTD, has announced service changes due to take effect this Sunday, June 13th. The RTD will lift the vehicle capacity limits that have been in place since the start of the pandemic. RTD is also making minor adjustments to the schedules of various local and regional bus routes, as well as to the E, L, and W rail lines. The new schedules are available online at rtd-denver.com. One measure that will remain in place is the federal order to require masks on transit through mid-September. The Friday forecast for the Front Range: a little cooler with a high of 80 degrees today, but returning to 90 for Saturday and Sunday, and mid-90s all next week. Right now, it's 63 degrees outside our Boulder studios.
I believe that we are setting a precedent for the nation. And I think that as we continue to leverage our partnerships, so we continue to see people as people, we will be able to instill those Jesuit values that we all know and love to make sure that we can have safe outdoor spaces for the people experiencing homelessness, but also making sure we see that all individuals in Denver matter.
That was Denver Deputy Mayor Murphy Robinson speaking yesterday at the inauguration of the Safe Outdoor Space at Regis University. The site is the third and latest authorized urban campground for the unhoused in Denver. KGNU's Dave Ashton went to the opening ceremony at Regis University and shares these interviews.
Hi, could you introduce yourself?
I'm Ebony with the Safe Outdoor Space.
So Ebony, you work here. And this is a brand new project. Tell us about how you got involved.
Well, I work at St. Francis Center typically, and Ian, he is the site manager here now, and he approached me and asked me to come over here because he really likes my skills that I come with de-escalating and just being a people person. And so I took some time off from St. Francis Center, and then the contract here is, I think, 6 months, and so I am doing the 6 months from now because I think, like, being a part of the community, I don't think you should just come in and leave really quick. So I am here until December.
And so what are your duties?
To engage with the community, really get to know the people in the safe outdoor space, help them with what they need, really, and connect them with resources if they need, and just be a support for them, really.
What's your thoughts on this big opening day?
I feel good about it because it brings community engagement. So I do feel good about it, and it brought people out here, and I think it'll get the word out more. So that's always positive. So I think that you can look at them as a negative at first, but I can see the overall picture, and I think more community engagement and people seeing that the homeless people are, it's like a reflection of yourself. Like, I think that we're all the same, and I think that it helps to see that these people are not going to bring negativity to their community. So I do think that it's positive that all these people are here, and the little kids too. I appreciate them being here.
I'm Cole Chandler, Executive Director of Colorado Village Collaborative.
So Cole, tell us a little bit about the history of this project.
The story of this project is that back in January, we actually had a volunteer from our site in Capitol Hill who was a longtime professor at Regis University, retired beloved professor, who was standing there volunteering and said, you know what, I think Regis not only could do this, but Regis should do this. And he made an introduction to President John Fitzgibbons at Regis University. And we were able to share a vision for doing a safe outdoor space at Regis back in January. The university took time deliberating, discerning, and around the beginning of May, they were comfortable to announce that we were going to move forward. And in less than 6 weeks' time, we opened the safe outdoor space here at Regis.
Wow, that seems like a really fast timeline to go from idea to reality. Were you surprised by that?
You know, I think the strength of this model is that it can move quickly. And if you have committed partners, especially, it can move quickly. And so I was just really grateful to Regis for their courage and the wonderful space that they made available and their partnership along the way to make it happen.
How did you and the Colorado Village Collaborative lend your expertise to this project?
Yeah, you know, we've really worked with the city, worked with a variety of partners to bring this project to life, to write an operation plan, to submit for permit, to help bring it up on site here. And now we're standing up the St. Francis Center and their staff to really operate the site day in and day out.
Safe outdoor spaces are a new and evolving reality. Right. What have you all learned along the way from the first one that you've done to opening this one today?
Sure. I think we've learned how to serve people well in a long-term residential environment and how to deliver services. At our previous sites, we delivered over 190 case management appointments. We delivered 32 COVID vaccinations. We had 14 people make longer-term housing connections. And so within this environment, we've learned how to serve people well and are excited to continue doing that.
Are there other similar projects on the horizon?
So we're going to be opening up a site at Park Hill United Methodist Church within the next week or two.
I'll probably see you there. How can people find more information?
On our website, coloradovillagecollaborative.org.
Thanks, Cole.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
That was KGNU's Dave Ashton speaking with Cole Chandler, Executive Director of the Colorado Village Collaborative, and Ebony Sanchez, Day Coordinator of the new Safe Outdoor Space at Regis University. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. The Colorado legislature wrapped up its session this week, but not before passing a suite of measures targeting gun violence. Bills included a mandate for safe storage, restrictions on gun ownership for people with histories of domestic violence, and the creation of an office within the Department of Health to study the root causes of gun violence. The measures may not have had a chance a year ago, but the mass shooting at the King Soopers in South Boulder sparked action. But not all action on gun safety is legislative, as Hannah Lee Myers reports.
That's the sound of two men beating the barrel of an AR-15 with hammers and turning it into a garden tool. It's a sound you'll be able to hear in Boulder this weekend as part of a gun buyback event hosted by Community United Church of Christ in collaboration with Raw Tools, the organization that transforms the guns. Reverend Nicole LaMarche, pastor of Community United Church of Christ based in South Boulder, shared the details for the event that's taking place this Sunday, June 13th.
The event is really in two parts. From 1 to 4 is the opportunity for the safe disposal of any unwanted firearms. And Raw Tools offers the trained professionals that offers the oversight for the saw stations where weapons are transformed into the parts that will then later become art and garden tools and all that. So, and then the next part of the event at 4:30, we're inviting community members, religious leaders, anybody moved to join us in a procession from the site of the massacre at the King Soopers parking lot to walk with us to our sacred site at 2650 Table Mesa Drive, where we'll have a brief press conference and we'll have a demonstration from Raw Tools where we'll get to see and those who are moved participate in actually the physicality of it, of transforming something painful into something powerfully different.
And there are gift cards on offer for those who are willing to surrender firearms, correct?
Yes, that is to offer another incentive. And there's a range of the amount you get based on the kind of weapon that you're showing up with.
So what would you say to individuals that may see this as a political action? And considering that it's being held by a church, they might be confused or even put off by that.
I really appreciate that question. In our context, church is a verb. This action directly for us is rooted in the call to love God, to love neighbor, to love our community in a way that puts our responsibility to keep one another safe over individual rights. Now, I totally understand the landscape here in Colorado is purple, so to speak, around guns. I also know that Colorado in many contexts is seen as the poster child for mass gun violence. And so this is an invitation to be known for something else, to be known as a place that doesn't accept the blood-stained status quo that we are living with right now. So again, I really appreciate your question.
Now I'd like to turn things over to Mike Martin, Executive Director of Raw Tools. Mike, tell us about what Raw Tools does and how you got started doing what you do at Raw Tools.
Yeah. So I'm a Mennonite pastor licensed for the specific work of raw tools and turning guns into garden tools. But the end is to also introduce people to nonviolent alternatives to conflict. So the Mennonite faith kind of has this tradition of nonviolence, but also a heavy tradition in service. And so this is part of that tradition. And it was an idea that kind of came up before Sandy Hook happened. But when Sandy Hook happened, my wife was a first grade teacher, and the same number of kids that were killed that day were also the same number of kids that were in her class. And so it was something that made it hit home a little bit for us, and realizing that we didn't want it to hit any closer to home. But it was just this way of how can we take this idea of turning swords into plowshares and make it current. We can turn something that brought so much pain and really use the tool that brought that pain and transform it into something else that will bring life. And so these tools that we make out of the guns that are donated will be active in the Boulder community, in the Colorado community really as a whole, because we have a lot of other churches that are lining up to do more buybacks throughout Colorado this year.
So, Mike, I'm curious, when people come to surrender these guns, what's their story? Is there a common story, or why are they willing and ready to get rid of these weapons?
So we've had gun donors who, for instance, after Sandy Hook, one gun owner donated his AK-47 but kept his long guns and handguns. And then 5 years later, another mass shooting happened and he gave us his handguns. And so sometimes people are giving us the guns they feel like they don't think are necessary anymore. And sometimes they start to give us more guns. But then other times, most people don't know that after a suicide, usually if a firearm was used, it's returned to the family. And so they have this thing that brought great trauma to them. And I've destroyed firearms that come straight out of an evidence box before. And so we have this stories of deep trauma and tragedies that are connected to why these people are giving up their firearms. There's a wide spectrum. We're also coming into a time where a lot of folks are inheriting guns. While we own a lot of firearms in this country as a whole, a large majority of those firearms are concentrated in a select few. So 40% of the firearms in the U.S. are owned by 8% of gun owners. And a lot of those are older white males. So when generation to generation, we're going to start seeing this ability to choose what we want to do with what we've inherited. So there's a lot of different reasons people donate firearms, but it all comes down to either it's harmed them or they don't feel like they're necessary anymore.
And the other piece of the profile to add is domestic violence. One thing that I've learned is that often those incidences where women especially are killed involve a firearm.
And there's this myth that you're safer with a gun in your home, where it's three times more likely that the gun in your home will be used against you or someone you love than using it against an intruder. And to Nicole's point, it's five times more likely to be used against women. So just that alone helps us start to have this conversation of alternative ways to live together than preparing for some moment where we might have to pull the trigger against someone in our community. So I think this is all a step towards that direction, that we're looking for better ways to live together, but also to be in community with each other.
This community-wide Guns to Gardens Gun Safe Surrender event is taking place this Sunday, June 13th. You can find more information by contacting the Community United Church of Christ or Raw Tools, or you can go to cuccboulder.org/social-action. For KGNU, I'm Hannah Lee Myers.
Live performances are starting to come back, and the Bandshell in Central Boulder is becoming a favored venue for large gatherings. The city has announced the return of the Boulder Creek Festival in mid-July, and the Dairy Center for the Arts is already hosting a series of concerts at the Outdoor Auditorium. KGNU's Rosana Longo caught up with Glenn Webb from the Dairy Center of the Arts at last weekend's Noche de Peña concert to get his thoughts on the return of the performing arts.
Everyone's at a different comfort level, and we understand that. We understand that not everybody is ready to come out and be part of a crowd. Right now, the crowds are small enough to where there's plenty of distance between people. It's not a problem at all. If you don't feel comfortable sitting next to someone, you don't have to. If you want to wear a mask, you can. We certainly encourage people who haven't been vaccinated to wear masks. What we're doing here is making sure that all these performers who haven't had a chance to do their art publicly and get paid for it have an opportunity. So it's very, very important for us to support them because they are the reason we exist. And so it's very, right now, more than ever, we need to encourage audiences to come out and support performers, to support artists, because they need it very badly. And what we have learned from the last year and a half is we need it as well, that it is very special, very unique experience for human beings to come together and be at a live performance.
It seems like artists need the audience so they can connect with the audience. Perform with an audience is like magical.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think they need the financial support to have an actual paying gig. But like you say, they also have been craving that connection because that's what we learned with the streaming performances, is that they were something that could fill a gap a little bit, kind of, for a little while, but they're not the same. That you need that direct connection of a performer and an audience. And that's, you're right. The artists really, really need that as well in order for them to be who they are, to be what they are.
When you talk about entertainment, it's not only the musicians and the venue, but everybody else around that works, people that are setting up the stages, the food, the drinks that are served, everything. So it's almost like a whole ecosystem that gets affected. How many years is going to take us to be where we used to be?
It is an ecosystem. It is very much an ecosystem. And you can see that in communities that a lot of times they'll have a downtown area that might start to decline and a lot of businesses will move away. And then a live performance venue opens up in that downtown area and suddenly all of the businesses come back. Because when people are coming down to go see a show, to go see a performance, then they're going to go somewhere to eat something first, maybe go out for a drink afterwards. They're going to walk past art galleries. They're going to be engaged with their community once again. And so I think it is a very crucial sort of almost like a cornerstone of that ecosystem of the economies. And as it opens up, I mean, a lot has been made out of pent-up demand for performing arts. It won't happen as quickly as we hope. I think it will be gradual. By the end of the summer, we should be seeing close to where we were, but not the same as where we were before the pandemic. A lot of people still don't feel comfortable. And I also think that people got out of the habit. And there are also going to be a lot of competition with people trying to make up for lost time. So there's going to be a lot more events coming this end of summer and into the fall. And so there's going to be a lot of competition for those audience members. So I hope they come out quickly, but I'm not certain that they will.
You're going to continue doing this series?
The city gave us a wonderful opportunity to have these shows here at the Bandshell this summer, which is great for us to go off-site from the dairy into a different part of the community and invite audiences here together. And so that's been a wonderful step for us. As far as the building itself and performances inside, we're starting to have them. We had one last Sunday, fairly well attended. So it is coming back. As far as our plans, we're trying to embrace as many people in as many different ways as we can to build back up. We are somewhat hindered financially on how fast we can build back. We don't really have the cash flow to hire a bunch of staff back right away. We kind of have to build the demand slowly, and as the revenue builds, then we can start adding more staff. The other arts organizations that rent our spaces, I mean, the dairy is a big resource for all these arts organizations, and they're just starting to come back and start using our spaces again. And so as that builds, well, then we can hire more people and do more things. and we can't wait until we can have more Noches de Peña. This is wonderful, but those evenings, I remember them well as well, Rosanna. Those were absolutely just magical. I mean, it was just so fun to have so many people together, and everybody, it's like seeing everybody, seeing people they hadn't seen for who knows how long, and connecting again. And that's exactly what the arts does, is it brings people together and makes them, gives them a reason to connect. I mean, that's really what the dairy is for. It's for creating community through the creative arts.
For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
And that does it for Friday's Morning Magazine on 88.5 KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Thanks for joining us here on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young.